Not a Disney Movie is an exploration of animated movies not made by Disney. It contains explicit language.
Oh, I suppose you could do better, could you?
No, I will hire a professional who could.
Hello, and welcome to Not a Disney Movie. This week, we watched...
The Croods. Yes. From 2013?
Yeah, 2013.
Yeah.
So, this was my pick. I thought this was a bad... my preconceptions going into this were that I thought this was a bad movie, and that I hadn't seen it, neither of which are true.
Alright. Well, certainly after you watched it, you realised that you had seen it, because...
Yeah. I mean, we were good, like...
You watched it by then.
Yeah, we were good, like, three quarters of the way through it, and I realised, oh, I have seen this movie.
Why did you think it was going to be a bad movie?
I don't know, I had in my head that it was just a kind of also-ran garbage movie, which is kind of, like, in my head, what this podcast is about, is that, like, Disney have, like, a bar of quality that is consistently quite high, and then there are many other sort of animated features which are not as good. But this isn't one of them. This is a good movie. I like this a lot.
I loved this movie. I laughed throughout loudly. But I also did think it was going to be a bad movie. And the reason I thought it was going to be a bad movie is because I think what I've discovered is that I don't like computer animated movies. I don't like the way they look. They look cheap, even though they're objectively not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And like the more work that is done to make them look not cheap makes them... look worse to me. And at the end of the movie, they had in the credits, they had sort of 2D versions of the characters drawn around the credits, and I was like, this movie would have been so much more delightful if the whole movie had been done like that. And can I tell you a fact that probably you already know?
Go on.
What of my two notes that I wrote down, one of them was simply the word Aardman.
Oh, yeah, okay. I know about this.
Okay, well, you tell, because you probably have more details.
Well, I mean, as much as I know, is like the film was originally announced in May 2005 as Crude Awakening, and it was going to be made by Aardman. It was part of like a five-movie deal they had with DreamWorks. But that didn't happen. Instead, what happened was that they still worked on a sort of caveman-y style movie, Aardman, and that became First Man, which came out in like 2000 and something.
Is that stop motion then?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I've never heard of it. Maybe I have.
No, I haven't seen it either, to be honest. I vaguely remember it, but I haven't seen it. But yeah, that didn't happen, so that's all I know about that. And what's your other note?
My other note is the word protagonist, because I wanted to ask you who you thought the protagonist of the movie was.
Right. I think it changes.
It changes dramatically midway through. You think you're watching one movie, then it's like, we need to give Nicolas Cage more to do.
Yeah.
Although, so...
Hang on. Let's back up a bit, sorry. Let's just outline kind of like what this movie is and what the plot of this movie.
Okay. Plot of the movie is a family of Neanderthals. Neanderthals?
Yeah, I think that's important. That they are... Neanderthals, because as we kind of understand it, or as I understand it, Neanderthals are kind of like one branch of the tree that is man, and they were like bigger and stronger but not as smart. And then we get Guy, who is like human 2.0, who is not as strong but smarter,
which I'm pretty sure, the little I know about early modern man,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that that's kind of accurate, that they did live side by side. So they live in a cave. It's a family of Neanderthals. They live in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
They operate very much like as in sort of hunter-gatherer, like very primitive way.
Yeah.
And then they meet up with Guy, who's like, I guess, the more like an
human. Yeah, yeah. He knows how to make fire.
He knows how to make fire.
And shoes.
And he has all these, like, ideas about how to make living more comfortable, and that causes tension.
Mm-hmm.
And together they go on a journey because they think the world is going to end, which is
what happens.
Yeah. Well, no, the world doesn't end. Well, the continents seem to be shifting.
Yeah, yeah. Where they are currently living, their home is destroyed. So this is as it was described to me by the director, not personally.
You called him before.
Yeah, yeah. It's the first family road trip because they go on this trip from like their home gets destroyed, so they have to go find somewhere new to live, and so they head towards the mountain in the distance,
which is all a big metaphor for tomorrow, progress, and like don't be afraid. Which I personally have a problem with because I think fear is what keeps you alive.
I mean, that is their metaphor, that is their mantra at the start of the movie.
Yeah, never not be afraid.
Never not be afraid.
Which is my mantra. And that is
you relate a lot to this movie.
Well, that's why I can't eat anything too acidic because the sheer amount of worry coursing through my body at all times means I'm being held together by a fucking thread at this point.
You're just worried about doing shots of vinegar or something. You're constantly afraid of me doping you with vinegar or something.
No, I just mean that, like, the anxiety bubbling away inside of me is, like, destroying my internal organs. Oh, okay, I'm not long for this world, so you should...
Sure.
Which is why you should be nicer to me in all areas. Because...
Well, that just reminds me of that episode of, like, Orange is the New Black where Tasty gets, like, massive stomach cramps because she's lying about something.
Yeah, I just have stomach cramps because I'm scared.
So back to your earlier point about who is the protagonist of this movie.
So it starts off being Emma Stone's character, who's called Eep.
Yeah, Eep is the daughter.
And she's like Moana. She's a Moana character where she's like, and also Belle from Beauty and the Beast, where she's like, I want to escape this provincial life.
Yeah, she's like, there must be more to living than just like...
Living in a cave
and hiding from everything.
And she finds that in Guy, who's like... You can light a fire and then you don't need to be scared of the dark. Once Guy gets sort of absorbed into the family group, then the tension is between Guy and the father character, who's played by Nicolas Cage, because their macho stupidity, when they're like, there can only be one leader of the family, and the dad character is like, I can't have this young buck coming and taking my family from me.
Yeah, it seems like that's a common theme through a lot of the movies that we've watched. The movies we've watched recently, where you've got the X factor introduced into an existing group that shakes things up and everyone gets attracted to what they're doing as like the new thing, whether it's over the hedge or... But like, I just feel like that's quite a common factor about like the pretender sort of thing. But this guy isn't a pretender, he's just like... He just has a different way of doing things, which is contrary to how they've always been doing things.
Yeah.
Okay, so can I talk about the movie now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, when we first started watching this movie, I didn't know who the voice cast was. And so when I did realise it was Nicolas Cage, I was like, holy shit, that's Nicolas Cage.
That's why he said those words so weirdly.
Yeah, and then so the whole voice cast is pretty strong, I would say. It definitely falls into that category of movies getting stars to be in, of animated movies using stars to pull in like the crowd. So because you've got Nicolas Cage as like the dad, you've got Ryan Reynolds as Guy, the human that they meet. You've got Emma Stone as the daughter.
Emma Stone has a very distinctive voice.
She does, and it took me ages to work out who it was because I was like, I really recognised that voice, but I couldn't place it.
Do you know why she has such a distinctive voice?
Because she's an individual like all of us.
Well, but in particular, she has a sort of croaky voice, and that's because you looked confused when I said that. She does have croaky voice.
Carry on.
Apparently, when she was a kid, she screamed a lot, and it permanently damaged her voice.
Yeah, interesting. Why do you know that?
I'm a big fan of Emma Stone. I like her.
Okay. Not in this cage, though. So, Emma Stone, Catherine Keener, who I really enjoy. I feel like Catherine Keener is like how, like what I imagine like the best mum to sound like, or the best mum to be. Like, she just plays loads of mums, Catherine Keener, and I always think like she's great.
Well, that happens in Hollywood, doesn't it? Once you reach the age of 25,
she's not 25, she's older than that.
I know, but
I know what you're trying to say, yeah.
Well, so you know what I'm trying to say, and yet you still picked a hole in it. How interesting that you would do that.
Okay, do you want to make your point then?
Well, no. This is what men do. They're like, oh, I agree with your point, but I'm going to make it as uncomfortable as possible for you to do it. All right, go then. Go, say what you're going to say. Clarice Leachman also is in this movie.
She's the old lady.
Can I tell you a fact?
Go on.
So she's been around for fucking ages. She's been in loads of things, like in olden times.
Yeah.
But she died in 2021, in January.
2021, right, yeah.
Which is the year that we are in.
Yes.
At the time of...
It took me a second to process that because you said 2021.
Yeah, I did. Well, I also kind of forgot because 2020 didn't really occur in the same way that a normal year does.
Yeah.
But so one of the reasons that you were thinking about this movie, and as you're reported to me, and yes. I'm now reporting.
Yes, because there was a sequel just came out in the year 2020, despite this movie coming out in 2013. Like, that's quite a big gap.
It is a big gap. But she's in that. She appears in the...
Yes.
In the, so making it one of her last movies. Although it wasn't her last movie. I think she was in, like, at least two in her sort of last years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other person that's in this movie is Clark Duke, who plays the son, like the dumb son.
And has worked with Nicolas Cage before. Or, well... was then going to work with... He has worked with Nicolas Cage on multiple projects because he was also in Kick-Ass.
Yes. They don't... I don't think they share any scenes, but...
No, but they're both in the project. But
yeah, I mean, I quite like Clark Duke because when I look at him, he reminds me of how I looked when I was, like, 16. He's got, like, emo sweep and glasses, and I'm like, I can relate. And it's, like, a bit pudge. And I'm like, yeah, man. I feel you. And he's also in Hot Tub Time Machine, which is a fucking amazing movie.
I've not seen it.
The second one is trash. Don't ever watch the second one. I tried like three times to watch the second one.
But you never made it through?
No.
What happened? You were just like so disgusted you turned it
off. I just fell asleep every single time. It just got so boring.
That doesn't necessarily have any bearing on the quality of the movie. You may just have been slightly warmer than usual.
Well, yeah, that would definitely...
Usually that does the trick.
Temperature will definitely have an effect on my time this level.
And also, am I sitting next to you? Because then you will fall asleep.
Yeah.
My presence has a calming effect on Paul.
In some ways. In other ways, not so much. The Croods.
Yeah.
Opens with... one of my favourite things, which is a chase scene. You know, I love a good chase. And I feel like this one in particular is really spectacular because it's just shot really well. Like, it's really well directed and there's just so many good shots in it. And it does such a lot of, like, setup and world building. So you see, like, where they live is quite desolate, it's quite sandy. It's very, you know, muted colour palette. The creature designs are really weird. Like,
I love all the animals.
All the animals are bonkers, yeah.
And, like, there's so many visual jokes in, like... Certainly, I mean, it's probably consistent throughout the whole thing, but particularly in the opening few scenes when they're, like, introducing you to the world, there's so many moments where, like, everything is constantly alive and there's constantly things happening and a story being told, like, on top of the story.
They've like... The animals are all like, it's like you're a kid and you just mash two animals together. At least two. Like,
I read on the, as we know, my favourite place to go, the IMDb
trivia
page. And they were like, most of these animals could not exist for like biological and physics, it says as well. For reasons of physics, they can exist. I'm like, all right, fucking fun sponge. Like, I wanted to believe that gerbils could exist that are connected by their tail.
Yeah. But like that, I think that's the thing. This movie, we should say maybe, is set in like a fictional timeline. Like, this isn't accurate to historic man, but it is. They've called it like the Crudaceous period. That's the whole thing.
Right.
But this opening chase sequence is great because it sets up one that they're kind of basically superhuman, so they're really strong, really fast. The whole family, they're all quite triangle shaped. Like,
well, that's supposed to... I thought that was to distinguish them from Guy, who's like...
Well, yes, no, it definitely is. Yeah, yeah. Shape. Like, the dad will often kind of like walk on his knuckles, like very gorilla-like. It's breakfast time is the whole point of this chase, is that they're going out to get breakfast. And they manage to steal an egg. And between all of them, like the seven of them, they share like an egg.
A raw egg as well, because they don't have any fire.
Yeah, so they don't have any fire, for one. And they are low on food and like it's a real effort to get food is the whole point of that sequence, right? Is that they're actually this is the key thing I feel like about like Eep's problem with like her family is that they're like they're surviving, they're not living.
Right, yeah.
Like that's one of the kind of things.
They're not thriving.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is how we all felt in 2020.
Right? For sure.
Just let's get through it.
And then they meet one of the big scary animals is like a tiger mixed with an owl that like chases them.
A parrot, I would have thought, because he's green and orange.
No, before that.
Mm.
The one that chases them all the time is trying to get into the cave.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's got an owl head, because it like does like a whole twisted turn around. Okay. Yeah, at one point. That was that.
Was there no more to the story?
No, well, I mean, like, I just feel like that.
He's an owl, I have distinguished.
Yeah, no, but that whole sequence, I think, does like a lot of heavy lifting and story work that's really nice and really well put together. I did notice actually when I was looking at, like, kind of reading through a few, like, reviews of this movie, that a lot of, at the time, like, the reviews were, like, really mediocre. And they said, like, there's some fun action sequences, but it's not very funny. And. Yeah, and the plot is like quite meandering, and I was like, I don't necessarily agree with either of those points. Like, I do think like there are some great action sequences, and I do think it is quite funny. There's a lot of like physical humor, which is really nice.
Maybe I was just in a good mood, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and there's some like, let me say, like the creature design, the animals are like cute and weird, so there's like a lot to enjoy there. But then I think the point that you made earlier about who is the protagonist, that definitely has an impact on like what the story is doing,
yeah,
and maybe like
that kind of does slow the pacing down a bit, because you think that you're watching this sort of love story between Eep and Guy, and then her dad has a problem.
This
with
kind
it.
Of like yeah, this new romance, and then as that's kind of like carrying on, then it like it really switches to the dad, doesn't it? And then it does become all about this dad struggling to. You know, thinking he's losing touch with his family and stuff, and having to deal with this new guy that's come along and is stealing his family away, and then he tries to like come up with like ideas, and they're all dumb and they're really funny.
They weren't that dumb. He came up with the idea for shades.
Yeah, they were just bits of wood in front of your eye.
Better than no shades.
Yeah, I liked the self portrait. That was good.
Yeah.
Just.
I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. I loved this movie.
Yeah.
But I do think that. The reason I would be a bad film critic, and therefore the reason that me doing this podcast is not suited to my personality, is that I definitely like enjoy or don't enjoy a movie based entirely on my own mood at that time. No basis on the quality of the actual movie. Because the previous night we watched The Prestige.
Yeah.
And that's the stupidest movie I've ever seen in my life. But I had a great time watching it. Dear me, what a movie.
I tell you something I enjoyed about this movie.
Yeah,
is the youngest daughter, the baby.
Yeah, who's the same as the oh, I can't remember what the character's called in The Wild Thornberrys.
And I was thinking of that as well. His name is Donnie.
Donnie, yeah.
The baby of the family is very much like Donnie in The Wild Thornberrys. Like they're just talking like gibberish and you can't understand them.
Yeah.
But they are like ferociously fast and strong. And
also like the baby in The Incredibles, like.
Yeah, well, yes, but like.
It's a weird little trope.
Maybe, yeah. I think it's quite a fun trope. I just like the kind of the uncontrollable baby is I guess a trope.
Yeah, then. Who's like part animal.
Sure.
Feral child.
Feral child, yeah. And there's the son whose name I forget, played by. Clark Duke, like does something like looks at the baby or something like that, and then just like launches at her. The baby launches at him, and I think the mother says like, "If you're not ready to challenge her, don't look her in the eye." That was great because it's just a really quick line that you could totally have missed, and I was like, I pissed myself with that.
There's a part where the grandmother character tries to eat. Clark Duke's character,
yeah.
And it's like she's also wearing the skin of an like alligator,
yeah,
and so
like
she latches onto his foot and then tries to like do
and
a
she's
death
like raw death. That's what I mean, like there's loads of like great visual gags in this movie.
I mean, maybe I'm just like really have an immature sense of humor, but I thought all of it was really funny. Did you notice who the story was by?
No, go on.
John Cleese was apparently involved in the
story. Oh, okay. Well, I think that comes back to the Aardman thing, because yeah, he was originally on board for the Aardman thing.
But he managed to get a credit despite the fact.
Oh, that's
like, it seems to be that they came to him and somebody else whose name I didn't recognise to, like, develop the story.
Yes, yeah, so the person whose name you don't recognise is actually co-director of The Croods.
Okay. But then, so it went through various permutations before it ended up being the final product, but John Cleese was, like, got his name in there.
Yeah, I think the original concept was, like, pitched, and then John Cleese and this other guy whose name we've both forgotten worked up different versions of it, and then that ultimately came to become The Croods. Because originally, it was actually a story about a village.
Oh.
And then they were like, oh, we want to tell like a simpler story. So then they decided to focus on one family.
Maybe that's why it doesn't work then, because the... Well, it's not that it doesn't work, but because it feels weird in the middle. Because there was the idea, like, that John Cleese and What's-His-Face were working on was to do with, like, a guy, the Luddite and the guy with the new ideas.
Yeah, yeah, which is, like, the dad and the
and
guy, right? Like, they're the two opposites of, like, the Luddite and the inventor.
But then... And then the other half of the story is to do with Guy and Emma Stone's character.
Mm.
And then, like, her being, like, a Moana character where she wants to, like, see the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it feels like they kind of had both of these ideas and they're like, we can just make it work. We'll just have both of
them. Yeah, I guess the thing is there's no, like, tension really with their relationship. Like, they do just want to be together and like each other. Yeah. There's no one really... Like, the dad is frustrated, but he's not, like, physically stopping them or anything, is he? Like, he's upset and wants to prove himself.
He doesn't trust Guy.
He doesn't trust him, yeah, that's fair. But, like, the guy's done nothing to, like, actually, dispute his trust. Like, there's... I think what I did know about this film is there isn't really an antagonist. Like, they are moving away from disaster. There's no real... And, like, so that gives the movie sort of tension and gives it forward progress. But the internal conflict is just then between the dad, Nicolas Cage, and Ryan Reynolds.
Guy. There is no evil to vanquish but their own self.
Boom. Which I noticed at one point the mother changed her hair.
Yeah.
Or was that meant to symbolise something?
That she's woke now?
I She's like, I like shoes now.
In the credits, did you see there's a picture of Guy showing them how to make a handbag out of a, like, palm leaf?
No.
And they've got Emma Stone's character sort of modelling a little handbag that's made out of sort of folded leaves, like an origami thing.
Because this movie does have a few jokes based around, like... They basically come to a patch of ground that's full of sharp things. They can't walk on it because they're all barefoot, obviously. Except for Guy, who has shoes, and he shows them shoes. And then Ipa's like, ah, I love them.
Yeah.
Which obviously is like a trope of like, women love shoes.
Yeah.
Hey. And it does a few things like that where it's like, oh, you know, look, women like these things, I guess.
Or... When you looked at Ipe, did you, like me, think a lot of Ginger Spice from...
No.
Because she was wearing the tiniest, tiniest little dress. And obviously Ginger Spice wears a Union flag dress. But hers was a tiger print. Every time I looked at her, that's what I thought of.
No, I didn't. No,
she was ginger.
Yeah, that's what you're saying, but...
And I only have room in my brain for one of those.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sometimes it's my brother, but sometimes he gets kicked out by Ginger Spice.
Yeah. So I wrote down the inventions that Guy shares with them. So he shows them shoes. Then they make stilts, which again, funny comedic scene with the dad who's...
Yeah, that was great.
There's like this tiger, sort of saber-toothed tiger thing that's green that is chasing them for a part of that movie. Yeah. And then like he's below in this valley and the dad is above and he starts kicking with the stilts. And the tiger just starts swiping at the stilts, making them smaller and smaller.
It reminded me of like this scene from... Do you remember there was like a BBC thing... about like a nativity play where all these like grown-up actors were playing children in a nativity play. And you don't remember this? There's a scene where one of the characters is trying to go up some stairs and he's wearing a long coat. I think we should watch this. Although it's not Christmas time.
If so you know what it is.
Yeah. If I remember what it's called and who's in it. But one of the characters is playing like a toddler, not a toddler, like a very, very small boy, going up some stairs wearing a long cape, like, because he's being a wise man. Mm-hmm. And every time he takes a step, he steps on the inside of his cape, so he gets like progressively shorter.
Such a dumb joke, but good visual joke.
That's my sense of humor.
Yeah,
there are like three jokes like that. One of them is from The Simpsons, where I can't really describe it because I start laughing when I'm trying to tell it. Nobody thinks it's as funny as I do, but really glad it exists.
Can I tell you a note I wrote down?
Yeah.
So we discussed a lot about the dad and how he becomes the protagonist at one point, and he has this whole arc of like learning new things and whatever.
Mm.
But I wrote down, is the dad's whole arc to kill the mother-in-law? Because there's whole ongoing boomer jokes about like how he wants the mother-in-law to die.
I have two thoughts about this.
Mm-hmm.
One, on the subject of the podcast, what we are doing, I feel like those jokes wouldn't be in a Disney movie because there's a lot about death. He talks about death all the time.
Yeah, that is that's fair.
But did you ever hear?
And in Disney movies, no one ever dies.
No, they don't. They might vanish, but they don't die.
Unless it's like The Brave Little Dinosaur, which is one of Pixar's worst.
I don't know what movie that is.
It's just an incredibly sad movie about the dinosaur and all his family die.
We were talking about prehistoric people.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a word. Anthropologist Margaret Mead was asked by a student what she considered to be the first sign of civilization in a culture. And have you heard of this before?
Nope.
It's just a sort of quote that's become famous, where basically she was talking about the first sign of civilization in an ancient culture was a femur, so a thigh bone, that had been broken and then healed.
Okay.
And Mead explained that in the animal kingdom, if you break your leg, you die. You can't run from danger. You can't go to the river for a drink or hunt for food.
Mm-hmm.
You just become dead. Meat. No animal survives a broken leg long enough for the bone to heal. A broken femur that has healed is evidence that someone has taken time to stay with the one who fell, has bound up the wound and carried the person to safety, and has tended the person through recovery, helping someone else through difficulties where civilization starts. Doesn't that...
Oh, I thought you were going to like then say, but actually this is found to be complete bullshit.
That's my very surface level understanding of anthropology, so there may be more to it. But I really like that fact about like civilization begins when we start to like take care of each other and we don't just like... When someone is no longer useful, like an elderly person in a sort of prehistoric family, they're not going to be able to... There's just a mouth to feed, right?
Yeah, which is why in certain cultures, they then walk off into oblivion, as they should. And because they recognise they've become a drain on society.
In what civilizations do people walk off into oblivion?
I want to say Inuit.
Well, you can't just say Inuit. Okay. And I hope some Inuit people are listening and can prove you wrong, because that sounds made up to fuck.
Oh, it's definitely not, I can tell you that.
I hate that and I hate you. Old people are...
A drain on society?
No! Stop finishing my sentences, you assholes. Why do people think that people finishing their sentences...
It's like incorrectly finishing sentences.
It's so often said that, like, finishing someone else's sentence is a sign that you know them, but you just do it purely to upset me.
Because I finish it incorrectly. That's the whole point.
We finish each other's sandwiches. Look, I just think that a movie should educate you about how to treat your elders, and this movie was like, make constant jokes about them getting killed.
Yeah, well, I just think, like, some of the humour is a bit boomery. Like, well, that joke in particular is very, like, boomer joke.
Do you think, like...
Because he gets played, like, a few times as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is quite, like, astonishing how much, like, perceptions of humour have changed between 2013 and now. Like, it's not that long. I get, like, it's a reasonable chunk of time.
Well, I was on Reddit earlier.
Are you not on Reddit now? No. Is that not where you partially exist at all times?
I was on Reddit earlier, and there was a like an old cartoon, comic strip thing, And it was like a woman at a wishing well, and she was like, oh, I wish to be irresistible to men. And then she turns into a fish. And like, to me, and like the millennial joke is like, what? Like, men want to fuck fish? But the boomer joke is men prefer fishing over women. Yeah, see, your whole face was like, what are you even talking about? That's play? How is this even a funny joke? Because we just do not understand that humour.
This is what, yeah. The cause of so many problems in so many families across the world. We just have different sense of humours. Senses of humours. Grammar wizard, help me now. Senses of humours.
Can I talk about the finale of this movie?
Only if you pronounce it finale.
Can I talk about the finale of this movie?
Yeah, you can.
You get, there's a point in this movie where they've reached where they thought they were going to be safe, the mountains.
Tomorrow.
And Thunk, the dad, has like thrown all the family.
The dad is not called Thunk.
Is he not? What's
the
he called?
Son is called Thunk. I can't remember what the dad's called.
Oh, okay. Well,
but Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage has thrown everyone into safety. He's thrown them into tomorrow. They are supposedly safe. And it feels like at that point, the movie has ended. Like, oh, he's sacrificed himself. Like, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, because he can't fling himself across.
Because you can't fling yourself. I mean, I've tried.
I've tried.
You know, so you feel like, okay, is that the end of the movie? But then we just kind of we stick with him.
Of course we do.
But then, it feels like a weird ending. Like, it's extending the ending a little bit weird, because then you just spend the whole time with him for like the next 5-10 minutes, and so he goes into this cave. He figures out how to make fire himself, randomly, and
he makes a very convoluted plan to get himself over the
Great plan, fantastic plan. Mm-hmm. But there's a little, like, you know, we take a moment to, you know, this movie has a bit of quite a big heart in that respect, and like Eep is struggling to talk to her dad, and she's like, I've got so many things to tell you, and they just have a hug, and it's like, sometimes you don't need words, you can just have a hug and that's fine.
Well, that's another thing that was only very, very vaguely established at the beginning of the movie, that they have a sort of difficult relationship, but it's not continued. Like, it doesn't come up again and again.
No, I don't know. I think, like, they struggle to talk to each other. That's just the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, but
as many
what you have just said does not disprove what I said in any way. Part of the story needed to happen. It couldn't have just ended with him sacrificing himself and staying.
I mean, it could have. I feel like that would have been like a really satisfying ending to some degree.
That would have been a very sad ending.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. And that's, you know, maybe why it wouldn't be a Disney movie. But what does happen is that he then bumps into this green tiger thing that's been
parrot tiger.
Yeah, parrot tiger.
Oh, there's a name for it.
Oh, okay.
Online.
So he bumps into this animal that's been trying to kill them the whole time, and basically like ends up recruiting all of the animals that you've seen previously in the movie.
Yeah.
To create some sort of like airship to get them across to the other side, as obviously everything is collapsing around them. And I just looked at that scene and I was like, that was some really good cloud simulations. like the visual effects of like the clouds and the smoke and everything, like as all this like volcanic stuff is going off, looks awesome. And it comes like spewing out the other side as they get jetted across into tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find the name of it?
Yeah, he's called Maconivore. No, can't say it. A macaw and a carnivore together.
Maconivore. Yeah.
Maconivore.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's one point pointing out though as well is when they do initially leave their homeland, where it is all, as we've established, all like deserty and stuff, and they initially then cross over into this new land as they go exploring, like, it's just so colourful. Like, the visuals of this movie. Yeah, they're great. Like, it's really fun and bright and colourful.
It's like what your dinner plate should look like. If your dinner plate is all brown, you know it's not got any nutrients. But if it's got
beige,
I guess is what I meant, yeah. But if it's got lots of bright colours, then you know mm-hmm. you've got nutrients. Unless you're eating, like, Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
Only
other thing I really got to say about this movie is that I tried to find some behind the scenes stuff to watch, which I normally do, and normally it's quite enjoyable and interesting. All I could find was a lot of stuff about the sequel, and some stuff from like some behind the scenes of like recording when they were doing the audio, and Nicolas Cage is getting well into it. and then Emma Stone just keeps winking at the camera. So that was fun. And then all the only other thing I could find was a conference with the Korean animators,
mm-hmm.
and talking with the directors about the production pipeline, which yielded no new information.
That sounds so fucking boring.
And yeah, it was quite boring. It was very like corporate. And then like the guy like presenting it kept trying to like throw in like jokes and questions to the audience, and they were not playing ball. Mm-hmm. Like, but no one wants to do that, right? No one. You've ever been to like a conference and like the speaker's like, hands up, how many have done this or whatever? It's like no one wants to be put on the spot. No,
oh yeah, when you're in some sort of like corporate meeting and someone wants to throw a ball around,
it's just like, no, just come on, let's just get on with it, shall we? Let's just, next steps, please.
Tell me a fun fact about yourself.
Yeah, no, I cannot be bothered. Why is this not a Disney movie?
Well, because it wasn't made by Disney.
Factotum. The director of this, or one of the co-directors, previously worked on Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon.
Are they Disney ones? Yeah.
Lilo and Stitches.
Is Lilo a Disney princess?
She's not really a princess, but
yeah, but
she's Hawaiian.
Do they have princesses in Hawaii?
Maybe. I don't know.
Does the fact she's a small girl preclude her from being a princess?
No.
Well then. Lilo is a Disney princess.
Probably the fact that she's not royalty precludes her from being a princess.
I remember being a small child and my sister telling me that I wasn't allowed to be a princess because my mum wasn't the queen. And I was so very upset.
Coming at you with hard truths.
You don't need hard truths when you're a child.
You know, she's like, the least you can manage to be as a duchess. Or the most you could. Yeah, this isn't a Disney movie.
Because of the fact it's not a Disney movie.
Because of the fact it's not a Disney movie. But, like, it deals with... it could have got to a quite a dark place. And, like you say, there's a lot of talk about death in this movie.
Yeah.
And change. And it's a very small cast. It's only, like, 8 people.
Yeah.
Which is also interesting and not really a thing. I feel like if it was a Disney movie, they'd want to do some, like, larger world building.
What age do you think it would be suitable for?
I don't know. I feel like you could enjoy this at quite a young age because there's nothing really. You're just not going to get the dialogue or get the like some of the spoken stuff, but all the visual stuff you'll get. All right, but did you like this movie?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yep.
And I was surprised because I wouldn't have picked it myself. So
there you go. Yeah. And you were worried that we were going to run out of movies for this, but there are tons when I was searching for this to find this.
Yeah. I think I thought a lot more things were Disney than actually are.
Well, that's the whole reason about this podcast, because I was like getting irate about it.
What? You need to find better things to be irate about.
I mean, I pick and choose my battles.
You pick poorly.
Yeah. This is the hill I'm going to die on. More final thoughts for Is This a Disney Movie? I like this movie. I thought it was fun. Like the character designs, I think it looks really nice visually. I think sometimes things look a little bit plasticky.
Yeah.
But there is actually a lot of detail in the characters. You know, they've got scars or they've got muddy feet and all this kind of stuff. There's real attention to detail there.
They had no suntan lotion in prehistoric times, and so they're all very freckly.
Oh, very freckly. That's a nice little detail. Character designs or the monster designs are bonkers and really fun. There's the turtle birds as well. Which are bonkers.
There were some birds. I think they're the birds that kind of swarm around things.
The piranakeets.
Yeah. Is that what they're actually called?
That's what they're called. Yeah,
that's good. But so they have these big bills.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't...
It doesn't articulate where you think it's going to open. Yeah. It like comes down from like where you would think it would be attached to the face. Like that actually is the mouth. And it looks bonkers. Because then they've just got these like giant chins.
Giant chins, yeah. Which is... like a piranha, they've got those tiny little mouths, don't they?
Mm.
I would watch the sequel to this, for sure.
Maybe we'll do that next week.
No, because it's my choice next week, and I'm not watching a fucking sequel to your movie for my choice.
Alright, fine.
My choice for watching an old, obscure musical that you won't enjoy.
Maybe we do like an episode where we watch loads of shorts and we'd like discuss our favourites or something.
Maybe we do an episode where we just find something the most unpleasant for the other person to watch.
Like this is your worst and then this is your favourite sort of thing, maybe. Let us know. Tweet us.
Oh God, please, can someone tweet us, even if you don't know us. Just please. I've spent time. I made an Instagram and we did Twitter. I don't know why.
We never say it in the podcast, though. That's the problem. Like, we should say, like, now.
Do you have any idea how long I spent on WordPress trying to figure out how the fucking thing works?
Do we have a website?
Yeah, we have a... Yes, we have a website!
All right, so, check out our website.
It's got nothing on it.
Okay.
I might put a picture of Paul there.
Okay.
I'm going to draw a picture of you.
Okay, fine. So, yeah, visit our website. Visit our... follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Not a Disney Movie.
Engage with us. That is important in this world of social media.
Tell us what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of.
Tell us how to brand ourselves, because we're still not sure.
What you like. If you want to make us some merch and send us free stuff, that'd be really cool.
But you're setting your sights way too high.
Some people get free stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, people who have more than 5 listeners.
Maybe just, yeah.
Or at just least
like
3 of
them. Or like an angry tweet of just someone going like, "This is the worst show ever. I hate this. Yet I listen to it every week."
Oh no, I don't want that. And now I'm
anything negative I'll deal with. So, is this a Disney movie? Or would this be a Disney movie? Okay, thanks for listening. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook. No, we're not on Facebook. Instagram, Twitter, or our website at Not a Disney Movie. And tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear.
Don't
tell us what your favorite episode is. Tell us what you think we should watch next. Next week will be Natalie's turn to choose a movie.
And it's going to be from Russia.
It's going to be from Russia. And yeah, see you, love you, bye.
See you, love you, bye.